The great British critic C.P. Snow, writing in 1973 in the Financial Times, asked of a novel called Stoner, "Why isn't this book famous?" He wasn't alone. A small crew of ardent enthusiasts has been fighting to get John Edward Williams's novel the recognition they feel it deserves ever since it was published by Viking in 1965. In an essay about Stoner, Morris Dickstein, a professor of English at the CUNY Graduate Center and president of the Association of Literary Scholars and Critics, wrote that it is something rarer than a great novel. It is a perfect novel, so well told and beautifully written, so deeply moving that it takes your breath away. The New York Review of Books has recently reissued Stoner, and Morris Dickstein joins us to talk about it on this, the last installment of our underappreciated summer reading series. Welcome back, Morris.
Hi, Lenny. How are you?
I'm okay.
Good.
Stoner wasn't the first book that John Williams published. How were the others received? There were two novels and a poetry collection.
Well, he published an apprentice novel in the late 40s, and he discouraged people from reading it, and so I took his word and I've never read it. But his first serious novel came out in 1960. It was called Butcher's Crossing. It was a kind of Western, though he refused the publisher's permission to publish it with the subtitle of Western, because he liked to play with the genre of the Western, but he didn't want it to be categorized in that way. And I read that after I read Stoner, and it's almost as good a novel. It's also an extraordinary thing. It's also published in the New York Review of Books series.
So how did you discover Stoner?
Well, you know, I, like most people, I had confused John Williams with the black writer, John A. Williams. And then someone recommended it to me, three or four years ago. And I think it was one of the great literary discoveries I've made in the last few years. I then suggested to the Times that they let me write something on it, and they did. And so it's not as underappreciated as it was, because I was told that it's now the best-selling book in the whole New York Review of Books classic series. So, and if you look at the customer responses on Amazon, they're so ecstatic. I've never spoken to anyone who read Stoner on my recommendation that wasn't really thrilled by the book.
Well, his third novel shared a National Book Award. It shared it with John Barth, whose novel Chimera is well known. How come that didn't make him more famous?
Well, it did very briefly, but then he lived another 20 years and never published another book, and that's one of the mysteries of his career.
Well, he was working on a novel when he died. Has anyone been able to see it?
Well, the first chapter appeared in Plowshares in 1981, and at the time he'd written about 100 pages of it. Most of it, however, hasn't been published. As I recall, it dealt with World War II. He had been a flyer and radio operator in India and Burma during World War II, and he felt that World War II hadn't been handled well in fiction, and I think that was his intention in the last novel. I have no idea why he was unable to complete it. His standards for his fiction were extraordinarily high, and I do think that Stoner is in many ways a perfect novel. And I could see that self-criticism might have played its part in his not finishing that last book.
Well, it's interesting that was his last book about his war experiences. His first book, Nothing But the Night, he began writing while he was working, while he was in the Air Force.
Right.
Now, he had an unpromising start, as I understand. He'd flunked out of junior college and then worked as a journalist for small-town newspapers and radio stations, and then supposedly, according to the story, enlisted reluctantly in the United States Army Air Force in 1942. Reluctantly because his life wasn't going anywhere?
Yeah, he was just floating around. He was doing radio in various parts of Texas.
Oh, radio, that's terrible.
Yes, he had a voice for radio. Then he was after the Army, he was encouraged to go back to school, and partly because he sent that apprentice novel to an independent publisher and teacher named Alan Swallow, who actually published some wonderful things over a 30-year period after the war. And Swallow encouraged him to come to the University of Denver, where he taught, to do his BA and then to do a master's degree. And then he went from there to the University of Missouri, where Stoner is actually set, in order to do a PhD. And I think Stoner was inspired by legends that surrounded a kind of old character from an earlier generation who seemed a kind of mysterious figure, and And so Stoner is really set in the generation before William's own generation, and takes us through both World War I and World War II, and really describes the full life of the man. It's a book really about an ordinary man, someone who his own sense of himself is as being a failure, and it's about the passion and the integrity that can lurk beneath the surface of the most ordinary and the most seemingly failed kind of life. The Stoner fails in love. The woman that he falls in love with turns very rapidly against him and becomes, you might say, his worst enemy in the world. And almost a similar thing happens in his teaching career at the University of Missouri. It starts reasonably well enough, but then it gets caught in terrible academic politics, and he remains an assistant professor for the rest of his long career, mainly teaching introductory courses and not being able to do the kind of work for which he felt his life was cut out. And that, too, seems to be a failure. And yet at the end of the book, we discover a kind of triumph in that life that that no one would have seen on the surface.
I'm talking about John Williams' novel Stoner and John Williams' literary output in general with Morris Dickstein, who is a professor of English at the CUNY Graduate Center and professor of the Association, a president of the Association of Literary Scholars and Critics, also someone who is a great admirer of John Williams and especially of this novel, although I get the sense that you like all of his work. Is his prose the prose of someone who also writes poetry?
Well, I think it's really a kind of classical prose. I mean, he was a great student of Latin literature and of the classical period. His third novel, Augustus, that won the National Book Award, is set in the Roman period. It's a kind of I, Claudius. And the prose is very taut, very tight, very spare, and it's also, all of them really are intensely realistic novels, and I suspect that that's why they failed when they came out. To publish a book like Stoner, which is a very spare kind of realism, in 1965, when the world and the literary world especially were wildly romantic and full of all sorts of playful experiments and so on, was really to swim drastically against the tide. And I've come to think that that's why the book never really caught on at the time.
When I first saw the title, Stoner, I assumed it was about drug abuse. But here it is about a man who grows up on a farm, studies literature in a university, and ends up teaching at a university in the Midwest. And although you say that this is about a previous generation, there has to be a certain autobiographical aspect
Definitely.
To it, because that's pretty much the arc of his life. The difference is that he was a big success in the academic world, wasn't he?
Well, I don't think he was really a success in the academic world. He mainly taught creative, although he was a scholar who edited a book of Renaissance literature.
He also was the founding editor of the University of Denver Quarterly, which
was
called the Denver Quarterly.
Right. I'm not sure that he was the founding editor, but he edited it for at least 5 years. But I think that mainly he taught creative writing, and he mentored a lot of novelists, but he certainly wasn't famous as an academic. He wasn't quite as anonymous as Stoner, and I think the reason I've been puzzled by why he used the name Stoner, and I suspect that what it means is certainly nothing to do with drugs, but a kind of stoicism that the character Stoner inherits from his parents, who are farmers and who live a very stoical, hard-bitten life of unspoken suffering and misery. And essentially, that happens to Stoner as well. He is stoical through his failed marriage. He's stoical through his academic problems. And there is something really rock-like and stone-like about him, and it's the discovery of what lies behind that surface that really is the inner story of the novel.
Hey, you say it was unfashionable when it was published in 1965. What kind of reviews did it get?
Well, I think it got decent reviews, but it didn't really take off, or it didn't really gain respect until someone recommended it to Irving Howe. And a year later, in 1966, he wrote an essay about it in the New Republic that was a wonderful essay. And it set the pattern that once in every decade, someone rediscovers the novel. C.B. Snow did it in the 70s, and Dan Wakefield in the 80s, and so on. And I guess I did it for this decade. who rediscovers it and feels tremendously passionate about it, and then a lot of readers pick it up. And now I think it seems to be sticking. It really seems to be reading that's been taken up in a lot of book groups and so on. So it may well finally, 45 years after publication, it may well begin to see its day.
You've noted that the three novels, Butcher's Crossing, Stoner, and Augustus, the three mature novels, are strikingly different in subject, but that they share certain themes?
Well, there's a very dark view of life in the books, both of the characters and certainly of the author. There's a deep sense of despair. I mean, Stoner is virtually prepared to give up on his life until he falls into an extraordinarily idyllic but very brief love affair with a young instructor about half his age. And I suspect that dark view, that sense of stoical despair, which you get in all three of his major books, is one of the things that made it very unfashionable, certainly for the mid-1960s, which was a much more buoyant period. And I think that it's a kind of Roman view of life, a kind of dark, classical, stoical view of life, a sense that life is a kind of suffering that simply has to be borne, that really links all of these books and at the same time makes it somewhat too dark for most readers.
Also, there are lots of male rivalries. There are tensions between men and women, fathers and daughters. And as you say, ultimately a sense of disappointment and futility.
Well, futility and yet a sense of a life well lived. That's the remarkable thing about it. At the end, I think that Williams does a remarkable thing at the end. The last 20 pages of the book, which are about Stoner's illness and dying, he does it from the point of view of the dying man, which is, of course, very difficult because the author couldn't possibly have gone through it. And in that dying experience, which we get very subjectively, I think Stoner realizes a sense of, even in the nothingness that he's facing, achieves a deep sense of satisfaction about his life. He has experienced an extraordinary passion in his scholarly life, in his discovery of literature, in his transformation from a farm boy into someone who has this kind of intense spiritual experience, and he's discovered the same thing in the late love affair, and this gives us a sense of a life that's well lived in a way that an outside observer couldn't possibly see, but a reader of this novel can.
Do we know who influenced him?
Well, who influenced Williams?
Yeah, did he have favorite writers that we can see the influence?
Well, writers who are not at all like him. He was deeply interested in the work of Henry James, for example, and recommended it to a lot of his writing students, but his work is nothing like James. I mean, so it's puzzling. I think he just had I think there's something actually Tolstoyan about his books, because that kind of very hard, terse realism, the sense that you're not reading literature, but that you're reading life itself. Even the realists of the period, like John Updike, have a much more flowery sense of reality, whereas in Stoner and in Williams, it's very taut and spare and hard-bitten. And I think
thinking of the death of Ivan Ilyich.
Yes, 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 certainly. I think that certainly for those last pages of Stoner, that has to be the most influential text.
And what about writers afterward? Do you see his influence on any of the younger writers?
It's really hard to say. Dan Wakefield, who wrote about him, was not primarily a novelist, but he certainly was deeply influenced. I really can't think of. I would say that some of the younger realists today, like someone like Richard Russo, write a lot like Williams, but I'm not sure whether they've read Williams or whether he's influenced them. There is a kind of neo-realist tendency. Something like Ann Beatty, for example, also very spare and hard and almost existentially bleak in some of her work, is somewhat Williams-like, but again, I can't say whether she was influenced by him.
What about the poetry? There were two volumes, The Broken Landscape, Poems, 1949, and then The Necessary Lie, which came out the same year as Stoner.
I recall those poems as being fairly straightforward, a little bit like, I think they have a little bit like the relation of, say, someone like Raymond Carver's poetry, his fiction, almost like a kind of very terse, impacted version of some of the things that are more expansive in the prose writing. I don't have a real sense of him as a poet, and I'm not sure he really thought of himself that much as a poet, though there are wonderful, there are passages that are wonderful metaphors in Stoner that give me a sense of the poet. A passage, for example, where he talks about the lovers, and he said they made love and they made love again, and they were like children who never thought of tiring in their play. It's just a wonderful image, and that gives me a sense of a connection between Williams' fiction and his poetry.
Morris Dickstein is a professor of English at the CUNY Graduate Center, president of the Association of Literary Scholars and Critics. We've been talking about John Edward Williams' novel Stoner and some of his other books. Stoner has just been reissued by the New York Review of Books and is the last subject on our underappreciated summer reading series. Thank you so much, Morris.